Meeting of the House Judiciary Committee will come to order. It is now 1:04 p.m., Friday, January 22nd, in State Capitol, Room 120. Members present, we have a full house today. Representative Millett, Representative Klayman, Representative Lynn, Co-Chair Keller, Representative Grunberg, and Representative Foster. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones, or you also will be bringing donuts.
Yes, I'd like to, Madam Chair, I'd like to make amends for my grievous sin in this committee last year for having my cell phone go off. And I told the president this year that don't call me during judiciary session.
So we have Representative Lynn to thank for the donuts. Help yourselves. Before we begin, I would like to thank Christy Blair, the House Judiciary Secretary, and also Matthew from the Juno LIO, who is going to make sure that we have a sound and transcript of our meeting today. We have today version S of the draft committee substitute for House Bill 126, the Code of Military Justice Appeals. Can I take a motion to take up draft version S of the committee substitute for House Bill 126 as the working document?
It's already been done.
We did it last session. We adopted it.
Let's go off the record for a second. Confusion as to whether we have adopted version S as the working draft for consideration. Maybe we have, maybe we haven't, but can I have a motion to adopt it again just so that we have something?
Madam Chair, I'd move that we adopt 29LS0473/S as a working document of HB 126.
Thank you. The House adopts Judiciary version S of the for CS 126 as the working document, having heard no objections. We have before us today Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Weaver and Captain Forrest Dunbar, who will be discussing this new draft of the committee substitute. Before he begins, let me briefly explain the documents members have received. The version before us is version S, which includes changes discussed at the last hearing on version G of this bill. Behind that, members should have a copy of the bill that highlights the changes between these versions, an explanation of changes, a sectional summary, the legal memo for version S, and new zero fiscal notes. Hear that? Zero fiscal notes. You should also have a separate copy of the amendments I plan to introduce, and separately, Representative Grunberg's amendments, and also Representative Keller's amendments. Lieutenant Colonel Weaver and Captain Dunbar, you may begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think I'd like to begin just by thanking the members of this committee. Oh, I'm sorry. For the record, this is Captain Forrest Dunbar, F-O-R-R-E-S-T-D-U-N-B-A-R. I'd like to thank the members of this committee for the work that they've put in over the last 9 months or so to bring us to this point. We worked on a version of this bill at the end of last session, and then we did a lot of work together over the course of the interim, including several hearings and many CSs to get us to this point. I believe, and I believe Lieutenant Colonel shares my opinion, that this bill, as currently written, would set up a functioning system of military justice. I know we have a number of amendments to go through today, and those are well taken. And I think there have been improvements from the G to the S version. But in general, I do believe that this committee can be proud of the work it's done. The bill now is quite different from the bill as it appeared in March and April. And that's a testament to the hard work done by people on this committee. The dedication, I think, that the National Guard has shown to this bill, the Adjutant General, bringing together a number of senior enlisted and commanders to express their views and get the right punitive articles in here. So with that, I think we'd like to sort of turn our attention to the memo that your staff, Madam Chair, prepared that detailed the different changes between the G and the S version, and simply open up the floor for questions that members of the committee might have with regard to those changes. Most of those changes came directly from the discussions we had at the previous hearing. There were a number of suggestions from members of the committee and also from other private discussions with members. So if there are any questions on those changes, we would love to speak to any of those that you might have.
Does anybody have any questions at this point? Well, hearing no questions, at this time, I would like to entertain amendments. And we will begin with the amendments that I have introduced. The first one is amendment number, I'm going to call it 1, but it's S8 on the amendments.
Would you like a motion to move that amendment?
I'm going to move the amendment. So at this time, I am going to move what we are going to call amendment 1 for consideration.
Madam Chair, I'll object for discussion purposes.
Thank you. What this does, it allows the court-martial discretion, more discretion in sentencing than it originally had. So, for example, page 35, line 24. What this says right now is that Take the offense accessory after the fact. And it says that punishment shall be punished by up to 1 year of confinement. That mandates that there is some confinement. We want to make it discretionary so that you change the shall to a may. And we've done this with all of the crimes, with all of the offenses. So they're on page 35, 36, etc. That's why it is so lengthy. Captain Dunbar?
Yeah, Madam Chair, would you like me to speak briefly to each of the amendments as they happen?
Yes, I would.
Okay. The National Guard agrees with this amendment. We've had discussions about it. It basically is necessitated by a change that we made earlier in how the sentences are spelled out in the code. We already feel that our courts martial have discretion to do these things, but we agree that we want to make it explicit in the code, and for that reason we agree with this amendment.
You remove your objection?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection.
All right. Hearing no other objections, Amendment 1 is passed. I now move Amendment Number 2. That is S.9.
Madam Chair, I'll object for discussion purposes.
Thank you. Captain Dunbar, would you like to discuss this amendment?
Madam Chair, actually, I unfortunately have I have all of Max's amendments in front of me, but it looks like I don't have S. Oh, thank you. If I could get these the 4, perfect. Okay. This is clarifying for The statute of limitations with regard to nonjudicial punishment. Sir, do you have any additional thoughts on this?
No, I think it basically makes it. I'm sorry. Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Weaver, CHRISWEAVER, Alaska National Guard, State Staff Judge Advocate. Thank you for letting me speak today on this important matter. This just basically clears this provision. It was a bit confusing, a little complicated. It basically clearly states out the statute of limitations for both court martials being 3 years and nonjudicial punishment being 2 years.
And again, this is Captain Dunbar. The National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to remove my objection.
Thank you.
What's the number on that again?
2. S.9. I next move amendment number 3, that is S.10.
Madam Chair, I'll object for discussion purposes.
Thank you, Representative Millett. Believe that Megan Wallace might want to explain this amendment. Ms. Wallace, are you on the line?
Legal Service. Yes, Madam Chair. This is Megan Wallace with Legislative Legal Services.
Yes, Ms. Wallace, can you explain Amendment Number 3? That is S-10.
Yes, Madam Chair. Amendment S-10 is a reconciliation of AS 3330051 with AS 2605428B and C. We have amended AS 2605428B and C to reference the convictions of the prisoners because in AS 3330051, which is, you can see an amendment to that provision on page 59 of the bill. That provision gives the power to corrections to take custody of a prisoner based on their, and references a conviction. And before this amendment, the existing 2605428B and C referenced the charges that had been filed against the prisoner. So we just reconciled those, and we will reference a conviction in all those sections.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions for Ms. Wallace?
Madam Chair, I move my objection.
Thank you. Captain Dunbar, do you have any comments on this?
No, ma'am. The National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Thank you. Next amendment, that is amendment number 4, S.41, page 1, line 8, following proceedings. Ms. Mead from the court system. I move amendment number 4.
Madam Chair, I object for discussion purposes.
For the record, my name is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System, and we have no objection to this amendment. I think it does what it needs to do because there is a provision in the bill that would allow the courts martial to use the state's grand juries, and because of that, since we have a rule regarding grand jury, it will have an impact on that rule, and the court will then decide whether to do, you know, direct rule changes to that or simply note in the rule book that for courts martial there are some implications from this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Mead?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection to Amendment Number 4.
Thank you. Amendment Number 4 is adopted. We have next Amendment Number 5, S-50. This is an amendment from Representative Keller. Representative Keller, would you like to move your amendment?
I move amendment number 5. It's labeled S-50, but amendment number 5, yes.
I'll object for discussion purposes.
Okay, I may, my staff is here, and I may ask for a lifeline, but basically on on page 6, lines 8 and 9, the issue was here that the way it was written, it looked like it had to be the officer, the commissioned officer, that actually had to physically do the arrest, and this allows it to be a member of the, militia, the MP or something that can do this. So, and I believe that Lieutenant Dunbar, or it's Captain, I'm sorry, Captain Dunbar has agrees. Fine.
Madam Chair and Vice Chair Keller, so we agreed, we spoke with your staff this morning, and we agreed to the conceptual amendment. Is there actually a draft of the amendment now that we might be able to look at briefly? Looking at it now, this is the conceptual amendment we agreed to this morning, so the National Guard supports this amendment.
Any questions?
Madam Chair, I'd like to remove my objection to amendment number 5.
Thank you. Amendment number 5 is adopted. We next have amendment number 6. That is S.51.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number 6.
Madam Chair, I'll object for discussion purposes.
On page 19, line 19, following the word war, insert declared by the U.S. Congress. It just is to be consistent with the U.S. Constitution and be very clear.
Thank you, Representative Keller. Captain Dunbar?
The National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Questions?
I do.
Representative Grunberg?
Obviously, the intent of this is to make it easier to proceed with these proceedings in the event that war or something would make it difficult otherwise. Is there any other term of art that needs to be inserted here that's not there? And we don't necessarily have to do it right at the moment, but obviously it's the intent to make this as realistic as possible. And I just don't want to have anything inadvertently omitted.
Captain Dunbar?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, I believe the term of art we have agreed upon is contingency operations, which is later in that same section. So, as you know, war is very seldom declared by the Congress.
Yes.
And we want to be more realistic, and so we've included contingency operations ordered by the President of the United States, which is how all the post 9/11 conflicts have been conducted, and we believe that the combination of war and contingency operations there, cabined by some of the language we worked with Representative Ledoux on, will make this practically effective.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Representative Keller.
Did we move this? I'm sorry. Well, let's do that first, but I wanted to, if I could, as long as you gave me the table. After this is over, I would like to ask your indulgence to let me go back and ask a couple questions. I won't be actually making an amendment, but just clarifications that we have made with Captain Dunbar. And
That would be fine.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd like to remove my objection from amendment number 6.
Thank you. Amendment number 6 is adopted. We will now proceed to probably about 18 amendments that Representative Grunberg is going to be introducing. The first one is amendment number 7. That is S.2. Can we have a motion, please?
Move the amendment.
Madam Chair, I would like to object to amendment number 7 for discussion purposes.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg, would you like to speak to that?
Yes, Madam Chair. This deals with the language on page 2 of the bill. This is a statute that's been on the books since territorial days, and my motion removes two sentences from it. And this deals with suits against the National Guard. And as it is now, the law requires a person suing the National Guard to give a bond, and nobody else has to do that. And in a very similar case, the case of Patrick versus Linden Transport, the court struck down AS 09.60.060, which used to require out-of-state plaintiffs suing in-state defendants to post bonds. A number of challenges were raised. The court only reached one, held it was a denial of equal protection to single out that one type of case. And this is very similar. I believe a court would strike this language down if it were ever challenged. It's very unfair and can make it very difficult for somebody who's injured or somebody who's killed to maintain any kind of a suit. And the second one is something I've never seen anywhere else. If you lose, the language requires that the plaintiff pay treble costs, and this will bankrupt most service people if they're injured or anything like that. And we're simply removing the two statutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Captain Dunbar?
The National Guard is not opposed to this amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to remove my objection to Amendment Number 7.
Thank you. Amendment Number 7 is adopted. Let's go to Amendment Number 8. That is S5. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Simply...
Representative Grunberg, would you like to move your amendment?
I move the amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to object to for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This simply makes the language in the bill a little clearer. It's a grammatical amendment relieved from amenability. It is unclear to me. And what the word basically saying is, it means raise a defense that the person is not subject. Just grammatical.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Captain Dunbar?
Madam Chair, the National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Representative Millett?
Madam Chair, I'd like to remove my objection to Amendment Number 8.
Thank you. Hearing no other objections, Amendment Number 8 is adopted. We'll next go to Amendment Number 9. That is S.47. Representative Grunberg, would you like to introduce your amendment?
Move the amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to object to Amendment Number 9 for discussion purposes.
Thank you, Representative Millett. Representative Grunberg?
This just makes it clear that the person serving as a judge advocate must be currently certified. So they couldn't have been certified years ago and not kept it up with CLE and stuff like that.
Captain Dunbar?
The National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to remove my objection to Amendment Number 9.
Seeing no other amendments, objections, Amendment Number 9 is adopted. Amendment Number 10, that's S.48. Representative Grunberg.
Move the amendment.
Madam Chair, I object to for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This makes the section on summary court-martials track the section on special court-martials, which is that if a person who is the convening authority is also the accuser, they normally shouldn't be the convening officer. That's a conflict of interest. And so it would go to the next higher authority to conduct the court-martial. However, it may not be practical in all cases to do that. And that's why we have adopted a conceptual suggestion by the department to add on line 4, if practicable.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Captain Dunbar?
I'm sorry, ma'am. We had the earlier version of the amendment. We don't have a printed version of the new amendment. Could we see that for a second? Thank you, Calissa.
What's that?
48.
National Guard, Madam Chair, the National Guard agrees to this amendment.
Thank you. Representative Mellett?
Madam Chair, I'd like to remove my objection to amendment number.
Thing. May I just have a moment?
Do you want to grasp the feet out of the jaws?
Yeah, for a second. I didn't.
Almost had the number out.
Yes, there's one other thing it does that I hadn't realized. If the objection could be maintained for just a second, I want to put something on the record.
I didn't move it. I didn't get there.
If the members would look on page 10, line 26, it has a word in there that shouldn't be there, a superior competent authority. I think that was a typo when it was in there, and we're simply removing it. And I think that I hadn't been aware of that, but I think that's just a cleanup.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg.
The National Guard is not opposed to this amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to remove my objection to amendment number 10.
You sure?
I'm positive.
Yeah, I consider making an amendment.
Hearing no other objection, amendment number 10.
This has been a high stress week.
Is adopted. We next have amendment number 11, that's S-17, Representative Grunberg.
Move the amendment.
Representative Mellett.
Madam Chair, I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Simply, this requires, on page 16, line 29, that the documents be delivered to the accused, explaining why there's a delay, as soon as possible.
Thank you. Captain Dunbar?
Madam Chair, the National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Representative Mellett?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move my objection to amendment number 11, and may we have a brief at ease?
Yes, at ease. Before us, amendment number 12, that is S-20. Representative Grunberg, would you move your amendment?
So moved.
Representative Mellett.
Madam Chair, I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Originally, this provided that if somebody disobeyed a court order or a subpoena, which is a court order type, to produce documents or testify, the only penalty would be a violation, which is $100. This really is a contempt of court, and several years ago, a number of people on this committee may recall, we amended the contempt of court statute, which is ASO 950.020, to increase the penalty, and this just makes this similar to any other contempt of court. It now can be up to a misdemeanor. And if it's a civil contempt, you can order the person detained if they're subject to military law until they obey the order. And this should be treated, I believe, like any other contempt, and that's for the reason for the amendment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Keller.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate this amendment because of the fact that, you know, the way it was military finding of a civilian was a possibility there in removing it and tying it to statute. So I just wanted to commend you. Good catch.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, the National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Thank you, Captain Dunbar. Representative Mellett.
Madam Chair, I remove my objection to amendment number 12.
Thank you. Hearing no other objection, amendment number 12 is adopted. At ease for a second. Number 11, because I did not say that amendment number 11 was formally adopted. So it is. Amendment number 11 is formally adopted. We just adopted number 12. Let's go to 13, which is S-22, Representative Grunberg.
Move the amendment.
Representative Mellon.
Madam Chair, I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the members would look on page 24, line 16, what this deals with is if during the period of commitment the accused exits the military, then the convening authority must notify the person who's his custodian in the Department of Corrections and the AG. And it says that the AG and the custodian, Attorney General and the custodian, must take what further action may be appropriate. The word appropriate is not a legal term and is a vague and standardless delegation of authority, I would say. And what you normally would say is that that they should take any action that is legally permissible. That is the term of art, and that's all this does.
Thank you. Captain Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The National Guard agrees with this amendment.
What's going on? We are now on amendment number 13.
I thought it was 14.
14,
no. 13.
13.
We haven't finished with 13.
I think Representative Grunberg explained it. I think Captain Dunbar said okay.
We agree with this amendment.
Thank you. Representative Millett.
Madam Chair, I move my objection on amendment number 13.
Hearing no further objections, amendment number 13 is adopted. Next amendment is amendment number 14. That's S.44, Representative Grunberg.
I move amendment 14.
Thank you. Representative Millett.
Madam Chair, I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the members would look on page 24, lines 13 through 16, wait a minute, hold it.
21.
No, I'm sorry. It's line 17 through 21. This deals with the announcement of the verdict. And what it says now is that the president must make the announcement to the members of the court. This makes it clear that this announcement should be done to members of the court on the record and in open court and in the presence of all the parties to the trial.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Captain Dunbar.
Madam Chair, the National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Representative Millett.
Madam Chair, I remove my objection to amendment number 14.
Thank you. Hearing no other objections, amendment number 14 is adopted. We're now on amendment number 15, which is S-24. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment 15.
Representative Millett.
Madam Chair, I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This just makes it clear that the military judge may change her ruling at any time during the trial before a vote is taken on the findings. You can't undo what the jury has done. In this manner.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Captain Dunbar?
Madam Chair, the National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Representative Millett?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection to amendment number 15.
Hearing no other objections, amendment number 15 is adopted. We'll now go to amendment number 16. That is S-29. Mm-hmm. Representative Grunberg, please move your amendment.
I move amendment number 16.
Representative Millett?
Madam Chair, I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This deals with the language on page 29, lines 4 through 7, that states that the period of delay resulting from an appeal is excluded in deciding an issue involving the denial of a speedy trial. And unless it's determined that the appeal was filed solely for the purpose of delay with the knowledge that it was totally frivolous and without merit. It's either frivolous or not. There's no such thing as totally frivolous in the law.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Mm-hmm. Captain Dunbar?
Madam Chair, the National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Representative Millett?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection to amendment number 16.
Hearing no further objections, amendment number 16 is adopted. We will now go to amendment number 17, that's S-45, Representative Grunberg, please move your amendment.
Move Amendment 17.
Representative Millett.
I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What this does is it clarifies the Commission's jurisdiction. And this is a little more technical than some of these amendments. And I'm going to ask Captain Dunbar to explain it.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg, to the Chair. Madam Chair, may I speak to this amendment?
Yes.
There was another amendment that we had spoken with Representative Grunberg about, and we ultimately dissuaded him from putting forward that amendment, but it spurred our thinking, working with his staff, to draft this amendment. And what this amendment does is it clarifies, as Representative Grunberg stated, it clarifies some of the jurisdiction of the Military Appeals Commission. On page 31, we're going to make clear that the Military Appeals Commission can hear certain appeals from the state, which are laid out in AS 2605-525, and also certain a broader category of appeals from the accused. Because it wasn't in another part of this section, we added the ability to remand those cases after a decision. So the National Guard helped draft this amendment, and we'd appreciate it if the committee would adopt it.
Thank you, Captain Dunbar. Representative Miller?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection to Amendment Number 17.
Hearing no further objections, Amendment Number 17 is adopted. Let's go to Amendment Number 18. That's S-31. Representative Grunberg.
I move Amendment Number 18.
Representative Millett.
Madam Chair, I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the members would turn to page 33 in the bill, line 23, deals with who may notarize things and authenticate them. And it lists categories down to number 5. It says a person authorized by state or by regulation of the armed forces of the U.S. And I wanted to make it clear that the state and regulations, if it's authorized by any state statute or regulation, or any federal statute or regulation, it's okay. For example, ASO 963 allows postmasters to administer oaths, and that's important in little communities. And the clerk of the house can administer oaths, which is helpful around here. So that's why I offered the amendment.
Thank you. Captain Dunbar?
Madam Chair, the National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Representative Millett?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection to Amendment Number 18.
I'm sorry, I object to the removal of the objection, just for clarification if I can.
Did we get that right
in the wording is all?
So let's just clarify that. Representative Millett has removed her objections. Are there any further objections?
Thank you. Yes, I object.
Thank you.
Okay.
Representative Keller.
Yeah, I just want to read it again to make sure that we've got the grammar right. If we're deleting the word statute and inserting federal or state regulation.
Statute or reg.
Statute or regulation or by regulations, I remove my objection. I read it out loud and I got it.
I believe that Representative Keller has removed his objection and understands this. And
yeah.
All right. Hearing no further objection, Amendment Number 18 is adopted. Okay. Amendment Number 19, that would be S-32, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the amendment.
Representative Millett.
Madam Chair, I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What this does is it adds a crime, a general type of a crime here in page 35, lines 17 through 20, and this is a catch-all provision. There is a crime under state law called solicitation, and we're not just like talking about soliciting a prostitute. This is a major crime, not prosecuted too often. It's when somebody convinces somebody It's not a counseling or aiding or a command or procuring. It's saying you ought to go rob the bank. It's a good day and have some fun. And that in itself is a crime and has been prosecuted. Under this bill, which is obviously for the military, they define the term solicitation very narrowly. And that's on the next page, page 36, AS 2605582. But that only applies to a few types of solicitation, like soliciting somebody to desert or mutiny or do certain military things. A person subject to the code could be soliciting somebody to rob or somebody to assault somebody or anything else. And that's a loophole here that we're attempting to close by simply adding the word soliciting to the general statute for principals.
Thank you, Representative Bloomberg. Captain Dunbar?
Madam Chair, the National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Representative Millett?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection to amendment number 19.
Hearing no further objections, amendment number 19 is adopted. Go to amendment number 20, that's S-38. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the members would, I move the amendment.
Representative Millett.
Madam Chair, I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the members would turn to the section on riots, which is on page 48, it's AS 2605616, and it says a member of the militia who causes or participates in a riot. Well, somebody could cause a riot inadvertently, like you're in a crowd and you set off a cap gun or a firecracker or something. You're not trying to start a riot. And so this says intentionally starts that. And you could participate, but it has to be willful. For example, somebody could get caught up in a crowd that's going back and forth in a riot and not willfully participate. And this just adds what's called the mens rea or scienter, that element, so it's not just to be somebody who's just happens to be caught up in the thing.
Thank you. Captain Dunbar?
Madam Chair, the National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Representative Millett?
Madam Chair, I would like to remove my objection to amendment number 20.
Hearing no further objections, amendment number 20 is adopted. Amendment number 21, that is S-46. Representative Grunberg, please move your amendment.
Move the amendment.
Representative Millett?
Madam Chair, I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This cures a typo. And if the members would look on page 48, lines 22 through 25, the first part of the bill says, shall be punished by up to 6 months confinement. The second says, you may not impose a sentence of confinement for provoking speech and gestures. And what this does is it eliminates the 6 month confinement and makes it clear that you may not be confined.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. And by the way, good catch, Representative Captain Dunbar.
Madam Chair, the National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Representative Millett.
Madam Chair, I remove my objection to amendment number 21.
Hearing no further objection, amendment number 21 is adopted. And I think this is the last amendment. Amendment number 22, Representative Grunberg, please move your amendment.
I move 22, which is typed as S-49.
Thank you. Representative Millett?
I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the members would turn to page 56, and this is conduct unbecoming an officer. It talks about commissioned officers, and warrant officers for some purposes are considered commissioned officers, but for this statute, I suggest that whether you're a W-1 up to a W-5, you should be subject to conduct unbecoming an officer regardless of the rank you are as a warrant officer. And this would simply add warrant officers, W-1s through W-5s, to the ranks that are covered by AS 2605633.
Thank you. Captain Dunbar?
Madam Chair, I'd like to also note for the record that there is precedent for warrant officers being prosecuted under this provision at the federal level, so we feel it's appropriate, and the National Guard agrees with this amendment.
Thank you, Captain Dunbar. Representative Mellett?
I have a question, if it would be okay, and we might have already talked about this, and I don't remember if we did. We're changing line 16 to conduct unbecoming to a warrant officer. Do we need to change line 18, where it says unbecoming to an officer without warrant in front of it, and add warrant there?
I could speak to that, ma'am.
Captain Dunbar.
So, ma'am, what we're doing, I'm sorry, Representative Millett through the chair. So we are not altering the title of the provision. What we're doing is further defining who is an officer for the purpose of the provision, if that makes sense. So we're saying that a commissioned officer, a warrant officer, a cadet, candidate, midshipman, they're all officers for the purposes of this provision. So I don't believe we need to insert warrant officer again.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Millett?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection to amendment number 22.
Hearing no further objections, amendment number 22, our final amendment, is adopted.
Very good.
So with Representative Keller.
If you would indulge me, Madam Chair, I do not. First, I want to say thank you for your work and the guard's work. But there's a couple of items that didn't rise to amendments. It's too late now anyway, but I would like some clarifications. By myself, and maybe Captain Dunbar would help me out with if you don't mind. I'd like to take a few minutes. It just reveals some of the ignorance and the confusion I've got, and I think it'll help to clarify. On page 1, line 10 or 11, actually, these typically, as I understand it, criminal appeals cases go to the Court of Appeals, not the Supreme Court, and the reason that it is the Supreme Court is because of our Court of Appeals is backlogged. Is that an accurate statement, Nancy? Sure, I can't answer. But I'm wondering if that's an accurate statement and wondering why it goes to the Supreme Court.
Thank you. I'm Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. Through the chair, Representative Keller, that's not exactly the reason it's going to the Supreme Court. The way criminal law works in the civilian, non-military courts, of course, is you start at the superior court level and you have a right to appeal to the Court of Appeals, and then you have a further petition for review, that is, to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has the discretion whether to accept the case for further review. This bill now more or less mimics that. A party starts with a military court-martial, like the trial level. They do, within this bill, have the absolute right to appeal to the Military Appeals Commission, which would be the corollary to our Court of Appeals. And then now, under Section 1 of the bill, they have that petition, a discretionary petition, to the Supreme Court. So I believe it brings it in line with the procedures that are available to people in state court criminal proceedings.
Thank you for helping me understand that.
Do you have further questions for Ms. Mead?
Not for Ms. Mead, no.
Thank you.
I do.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. Just following up on that, are the members of the commission subject to the Code on Judicial Conduct, and are they under the Commission on Judicial Conduct for disciplinary issues?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I don't know the answer to that question. My instinct would be that they are not. I think the Code of Judicial Conduct covers judicial officers in the state and the commissioners of other, for example, administrative law judges are not covered by the Code of Judicial Conduct, to my knowledge.
Oh. We may pursue that later elsewhere.
And I may be wrong on that, I will say, but that's my belief.
Thank you, Ms. Mead.
Thank you.
Thank you. If I may continue, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Page 7, lines 13 to 18, and actually here I'm asking Captain Dunbar, to just talk about this section a little bit. That I and my staff were confused, and the question is whether or not a person who does a wrong that's tried by the civilian court, then it comes back to the into the military court and goes through a trial on the same issue. So if you would explain that.
Sir,
Captain Dunbar.
Yes, thank you. So I will attempt to answer your question, then I might turn it over to my superior here, who might be able to clarify a little. So I want to state for the record that we cannot conduct a court-martial on someone who has been convicted by a civilian court. There are clear double jeopardy issues in that case. In this case, I believe we're contemplating a case where we might be going forward with one kind of charge, and this person has committed an additional offense that the civilians are going forward in sort of like a different case. So maybe we're prosecuting them for kind of unbecoming, but they're also being prosecuted for a totally different incident for some crime against Alaskan state law, in which case we might deliver this person to the civilians to conduct that charge and potentially imprison them. And then they would return them to us once that has been resolved, and then we could still pursue a different charge. But we would not be having simultaneous court-martials to civilian courts on the same conduct or the same charges. Okay.
Thank you for putting it on the record. That was my main reason for asking that. Then, similarly,
Representative Keller.
I'm sorry. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. On similarly, page 20, lines 5 to 15, if you would just explain that section there. It has to do with the expiration of the statute of limitations, 180 days or something there, and I it looked like, as we reread it, we wondered if there couldn't be an extension that, again, might create a, you know, just go on and on and on, you know, to the so there's no end to the statute of limitations. But go ahead. I should have shut up and just said explain it. But if you would explain that section,
Captain Dunbar.
Madam Chair and Sir Representative Keller, I will turn this one over to Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver.
Thank you, Representative Lieutenant Colonel Weaver. Yeah, so it's a great question. Basically, one has to be read with number two, and so if it's a substantive crime and the specification or charge, specification on the military is the same as the charge, is based on the acts, then we do have a double jeopardy problem. But this particular provision applies to defective or insufficient. So, for example, if the specification is wrong by the date or potentially by the place, but the act itself is the same, then we, as a policy matter and under the military court system, the idea would be to it in effect tolls the statute of limitation or extends the statute of limitation, because we don't want the wrongdoer to the alleged wrongdoer to basically get out on a technicality. I would also add to that however, and of course the person still does have notice on the specific acts, because the notice on the specific acts has to be within the statute of limitations.
Okay. So this follows the
military.
Thank you. This follows the Court of Justice on that, and that's
yes,
fine.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for putting me on the record.
Through the chair.
Madam Chair, another question. Page 26, beginning on line 23. This is an interesting one pointed out by my staff, and again, I would like an explanation. My understanding is that there's a 10-year limit on sentencing in the state, therefore, what happens, the ultimate result is that the maximum penalty under this for a sexual abuse case is exactly the same as the maximum penalty for collaboration with the enemy or whatever, whereas in the federal case, that's could be a death penalty. And wondering if there's any ramifications of having those two maximum penalties the same.
Captain Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Keller. So we've certainly had many discussions on this. And we spoke with your staff as well, and we understand your concerns. We do feel that we should retain that 10-year upper limit on maximum confinement for a National Guard service member. You're absolutely right that in the federal context for the UCMJ, the death penalty is available for some of these offenses and more severe some of the more severe crimes. As I discussed earlier, the National Guard went through all these provisions over the summer and going into the fall and tried to discuss each one to see if we wanted it in our code. And we took a number of things out, things like murder, the highest level rapes and sexual assaults on a child, those kind of things, because we don't feel it's appropriate for our National Guard to be prosecuting those things. Those are civilian crimes, primarily civilian crimes, and they have much higher potential limits on sentencing. Now, with regard to these are clearly military offenses you're talking about, misbehavior before the enemy, desertion.
Right.
So those are perhaps a little more complicated to answer. But the key is to remember that in the vast majority, and by which I mean, you know, well over 99% of the cases where you're going to have misbehavior before the enemy, for example, which is what was he a sergeant? Bowie Bergdahl is being charged with. You're going to be in Title 10 status, which I know you're familiar with. Title 10 status is active duty military. You are subject to the federal UCMJ. So we felt that for those more severe crimes, if you are in Afghanistan, if you are in Iraq, you are, by nature of where you are and who you are fighting, you are Title 10. Now, we acknowledge that there are some, there could be a sort of one in a million, who knows what the exact proportion is, but a very, very unlikely chance where we would have an enemy here in Alaska, and for whatever reason, the federal government hasn't responded and federalized us. And in that brief window, one of our soldiers or airmen could commit one of these very specific offenses, in which case we would be limited to 10 years in prison. However, we still feel that 10 years is an appropriate punishment in the vast majority of cases. In the cases that involve espionage, there are a variety of federal statutes, non-military statutes, that still apply to our soldiers and airmen, even though they're not in Title 10 status, that they could be prosecuted with. And furthermore, there are a number of other civilian charges. So if you could imagine someone doing something with the pipeline, for example, if they are helping the enemy to conduct an attack on the pipeline, they are going to be guilty of things like attempted murder and assault and a variety of other civilian offenses, Alaska state law civilian offenses. So we feel we are fairly well covered. We understand your very specific concern, but we think that 10 years is an appropriate cap for punishments under this code.
Okay.
Representative Keller.
Thank you for putting that on the record. By the fact that it's on the record, it might alleviate some confusion down the road, but I kind of understand, think I got it, and I appreciate your explanation.
Thank you, Representative.
Last one, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Yeah, page 44, if you would, Captain Dunbar, just page 44 is talking about DUI and the conviction of civilian conviction on DUI and then dealing with the penalties that would come if under the military code, and just wondering if there's a doubling up or a possibility of doubling up. And I know that, again, Jim and I talked to you a little bit about this. If you would put something on the record there, I'd appreciate it.
Madam Chair, may I speak to?
Yes. Excuse me. Yes, go ahead, Captain Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Keller, through the chair, there are situations where a service member could be convicted in civilian court and still be subjected to administrative action or non-judicial punishment. However, they cannot be court-martialed if they are convicted in civilian court for the same double jeopardy reasons we spoke about before. So this provision has been inserted in this bill at the behest of our commanders that we spoke to this summer. For two primary reasons. One, we want to have the ability to do a non-judicial punishment and do it cleanly and have a place in our code that we can reference when we do that non-judicial punishment, which, again, cannot result in confinement in our regulations. And two, we know that the state of Alaska aggressively pursues DUIs, but in the unlikely case that the state of Alaska doesn't, for whatever reason, chooses not to pursue a DUI, and we feel there is probable cause and, you know, evidence to prosecute one, we want the ability to do so. But again, to reiterate your concern, there can't be a doubling up in punishment in terms of both a court-martial and a civilian conviction.
Madam Chair.
Representative Ketta.
Thank you again for putting it on the record. And I just, again, thank you, Madam Chair, for your work on the bill. And I also want to say Captain Dunbar has been diligent and has been in my office a number of times. I think he has a lot of us. And thank you. So.
Thank you, Representative Keller. So at this point, we will now take public testimony. And I note that we have, at this point, we have Megan Wallace from Legal Services here to answer questions, but no testimony, and Thomas Dosick from the Department of Law for questions. I think we have Casey Schroeder from the Department of Law for questions, and we have Ms. Mead from the court system for questions. Is there anyone? I will now... Public testimony. Is there anybody else online who would like to testify? Is there anyone in this room who would like to testify? Well, hearing and seeing no one who would like to testify, we will close public testimony. Are there any further questions from the committee? Representative Mellott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this an appropriate time for committee comment?
If there are no further questions from the committee, I was then going to go into comments. Are there any questions from the committee? Any further questions? All right. We will now go to comments or discussion from the committee. Representative Mellott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to say that I am very impressed with the way that you ran this committee and were incredibly inclusive to every member of this committee. And we really worked hard together. I think every person in this room has collaborated with each other very well, come up with the best product that we possibly can for Alaska's military. And I really appreciate your staff's hard work. I appreciate Forrest, your work, and now taking over. I'm happy to work with you. I just want to say that this is a good example of a good piece of legislation that has been thoroughly vetted, that has bipartisan support, bipartisan input, and it was a really big subject to tackle this year. And thank you for holding interim meetings, and thank you for the discussion and the ability to voice differences in a respectable manner. So congratulations to you, and thank you to all those that did input, especially those members of the administration that worked really hard, Nancy, everybody, all of you guys. Thank you so much for helping us shepherd us through this process. So I just wanted to add that this has been a really great process. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Lynn?
I'd like to echo everything that the previous speaker, Representative Mullet, has stated. I just thoroughly agree. All the military, but the National Guard, we have jurisdiction over here. We have a very vital job to do, and it's nice for everybody, officers, airmen, enlisted, NCOs, to know what the rules are. And if something untoward should happen, and it gets to a court-martial stage or non-judicial punishment or something like that, again, you know what the rules are clearly. I think some of the difficulties that we've experienced in the past, part of it has been the rules were not clear. Didn't know where we were going. So I think there's a vast improvement over what we had before. And again, thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the National Guard.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. Any further comments from anybody else? Well, then, Representative Klayman.
And I will just echo the comments of other members of the committee. This just actually the not only the initial bill and the work from the Guard and from the governor's office, but work on the committee. We spent a lot of time this summer and had a lot of work from different people on different aspects, and particularly Representative Grunberg's late amendments that we all spent a lot of time with yesterday. that represents, again, recognize, I think Representative Hav Grunberg had over 30 amendments, and we ended up only considering 15 of them, which is a credit, I think, to all of us on the committee. So thank you, and particularly to the Captain Dunbar and Lieutenant Colonel Weaver. Thank you very much for your efforts. It really made a difference for all of us. Thank you.
Representative Grunberg and then Representative Keller.
Yeah, I'd like to thank everybody who's been thanked. I feel like the Oscars. we have a number of people here who put in a lot of time. Clarissa did, Calissa, and Ted Madsen, and the two officers in the National Guard, and yourself prodding me.
Kicking you.
Yeah, and I think Deneen was involved too, as she's behind the scenes there. And I don't know if I've missed anybody, but... And it's got to go, you know, across the floor and to the Senate, and they may find some other stuff, too. So this is still a work in progress. And I'm kind of talking to you, gentlemen, that if you look at the work we've done and you see that it's not what it ought to be, I don't think anybody has any pride in authorship, and we want to get this right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Representative Keller.
Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion?
I'd like to make a comment myself. Okay. Do you have any comments, Representative Foster?
No comments, thank you.
Or do you have any further comments? So just before we close and I ask for a motion, this is actually the way government is supposed to work, the way this committee works. The way we worked with the administration, the court system, Republicans worked with Democrats and independents. I just want to thank everybody. My old staffer, Thomas Brown, put in a lot of work on this bill. Calissa, you've been great. Nancy, you've been extremely helpful. Casey, I don't want to miss anybody here. But this is really the way government is supposed to work, and I want to thank everybody here. Forrest, you've been wonderful to work with, and I know you, Lieutenant Colonel Weaver, you're going to be just as good to work with. And we
hard to do that.
So thank you, and could I have a motion to adopt this bill?
Madam Chair, I move CS for House Bill 126, Version 29, LS-0473S, as amended, with attached zero fiscal note from committee with individual recommendations.
Hearing no objection, the bill is adopted.
Thank you.
And thank you again, everybody. And we are adjourned, and I think we've actually made it in record time for this.